if you want to actually make a change, you can't be chasing results. You have to learn to fall in love with the process itself, because those results may not come.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 323, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, for those of you that are like me, that could probably use to maybe eat a few more vegetables on a regular basis, I'm excited to announce a new partnership that I have with a company called Energy Bits. You may have heard of them before. They've been around for a few years now, and I've talked about them occasionally, but we have a new partnership agreement now where you can save 20% on your order, not just your first order, but every order of Energy Bits that you may make in the future. Which is really cool. And in case you haven't heard of Energy Bits before, they're made of pure algae, which may sound a little bit gross, but it's actually a super nutrient dense plant product. And it's, you know, it's non-GMO and organic and all those types of things, if that's important to you, which it is. It's definitely a factor for me. And I mean, they just come in tablet form. You pop a handful in your mouth, you swallow them down with some water or whatever, you know, drink of choice, and you're good to go. And I mean, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, protein, the whole nine. It's a great way to get some more greens into your diet. And like I said, it's something that I need to do, and I'm excited to be partnering with them. So if you're interested, check out energybits.com and use the promo code DizRuns at checkout, like I said, for any and every order, and save yourself 20%. And let me know if you try them out and what you think. So thanks to Energy Bits for coming on board. And now let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, one of the things that I do on a regular basis is to seek out suggestions from you guys for who might make a good guest for the show in the future. There are so many amazing runners in the world, and I know there is no way that I would have been able to find most of the folks that I've had on the show if it wasn't for you guys giving me, you know, suggestions from time to time. Today's guest came as a recommendation from a listener, but what makes this recommendation just a little bit different is that the listener is today's guest's wife. So first and foremost, thank you, Angela, for the suggestion. It is very much appreciated. Here is just a brief section from the email that Angela sent that I think will make it pretty clear why I'm really looking forward to our chat today. She says, and I quote, "He has been running for several years now and recently completed his first ultra marathon, the Squamish 50K. I thought your listeners might be interested in his story because when he first decided that he needed to make healthier choices, he couldn't vacuum his house without getting winded. He is a veteran who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and when he retired from the military, his weight ballooned to 300 plus pounds. He had asthma, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, and an assortment of other health issues. So without any further ado, I'm excited to be able to share a few easy miles today with Joshua St. John. Thanks for joining us today, Joshua, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Definitely, definitely. And guys, if you want to check out Joshua's website, and he's got a great write-up from his 50K experience and that race at Squamish earlier this year, you can check it out at alife.relentless.wordpress.com. And if you want to say hi to him on Twitter, you can find him with the handle that's the kind of basically the same as his website, just at alife.relentless, all one word, all jumbled together. And I'll have the links for the places to connect with Joshua and anything else that makes sense today in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/323. So Joshua, the way we start off the show, and you're familiar with this because you listen to the show every once in a while, but that's just with a pretty simple and straightforward question. And sometimes it has a simple answer and sometimes it doesn't, but I'll just go ahead and ask it and see where it takes us. And that's to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Well, you get this answer from a lot of people, I'm sure, but it's basically the half marathon distance. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it's a lot of the same reasons that other people have. It's one of those distances that once you get it kind of dialed in, you don't really need to have to dedicate a tremendous amount of time to the training regimen. Mm-hmm. And also, while you're actually out on the course, I seem to kind of hit this happy place somewhere around mile 10 of any run that lasts me pretty much through the end of a half marathon. When you start going up to that marathon distance and beyond, you leave that happy place behind a long time ago.
Right.
So it changes.
That's very true. It's you know, you can settle into to 10 and gut through the last little bit. Or like you said, even that happy, that kind of runner's high will continue most of the time through the end of the half marathon. But yeah, you start going beyond that and it can get dark pretty quick if you're not careful.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we could dance around with a number of different ways to go, and there certainly is no shortage of topics, but kind of, you know, the elephant in the room, I guess maybe we'll start there and then progress. But, you know, like Angela said, like you've got a couple of posts on your website going through some of the archive posts and whatnot, talking about, you know, kind of your, where you were before you started running health-wise and, you know, getting to this point now. Can you kind of take us back to that point when you were, you know, at your heaviest, at your unhealthiest? Kind of paint the picture for everybody as far as where you were and maybe, you know, kind of get into what got you started and how that process into running began for you and your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in the military and I'm a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Thank you for your service, by the way. I forgot to mention that earlier. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I was medically retired from the military fairly young, and afterwards I kind of got lost. I didn't really have much of a direction at all, just kind of in my day-to-day life. When you have something like the military, because I was active duty, something like that is so much of your identity, and then just one day it's gone. It can leave you reeling. And on top of that, after my tours overseas, I was hospitalized and diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder and major depressive disorder, and became very self-destructive. I was a cutter for a few years, experienced a lot of self-harm, very dark thoughts, suicidal ideation, that kind of thing. And basically, at the time, a lot of the medical professionals that I was dealing with put me on some very, very heavy medications, which I absolutely felt like saved my life at a certain point. But over a prolonged period of time, it started to just damage me as much as anything else did. And my health started to take a turn for the worse. It started just getting bigger and bigger because of the medications I was on. And then it started having an impact on various systems in my body, and it actually got to the point where I was having doctors that were wanting to prescribe pills to me to try to counteract the side effects of the other pills that were being prescribed to me, and it started to seem crazy. So I wanted to try and seek another way. And of course, I always want to say that I'm not attempting to give any kind of medical or psychiatric advice. I'm just simply sharing my personal experience. And everybody's journey is their own. But for me, I got to a point where I realized that I was at a threshold for the various methods that they were using to treat me at the time, and something needed to change. And so I decided to basically start moving. And it was really slow and really agonizing. It's not an exaggeration at all to say that it would be exhausting for me to vacuum the house. I would be completely covered in sweat. I have to, you know, take a break just to do that kind of thing. And so I just decided I didn't want to live that way anymore. And I started to walk, and that was really where it all began.
When you were at that point and kind of trying to figure out what, you know, pardon the pun, but what the next step would be, was walking kind of it, or were there other options that you were thinking about, or because I feel like, you know, and this is just me obviously completely speculating and not being in that situation, but like, you know, if I'm feeling like I'm legitimately worn out from vacuuming the house, I'm not sure that the next thing that I'm going to do is be like, you know what, I'm going to try to start walking. Was that a process that took a while to get you to the point of saying this is what I need to do, or was the other situations, the medical situation stuff, so bad that you just knew you needed to do something and that was maybe the easiest thing, or why walking was the first step?
It was a kind of a combination of a bunch of things. In my experience at the time, I had become extremely withdrawn from family, from society, from everything, and it became very difficult for me to connect with the outside world in any way whatsoever. And so walking was just a very literal way to just get me out of the house. And so I just decided, where I was living at the time, there was a pretty nice section of path that was about 3 miles long that ran along a major river through downtown. And it was just kind of a river walk area. And it was very, very flat and paved and nice and was taken care of. And I decided to walk down there. And at the time, my now ex-wife, she was a runner, and she would go for, say, a 3 mile run, which for me at the time seemed just like a superhuman thing to do. I mean, it was completely unthinkable. I'd go out and I would walk maybe a half mile, and I would be in serious physical pain the next day. I mean, it would hurt everywhere, but it felt like I was doing something. Mm-hmm. And so then I just decided to give it a chance, and I just kept walking. And then it was actually during the process of my divorce, I ended up in Florida for a little while. And I started to take up swimming when I was down there, which was another thing to get me out of the house and, right. and to get out of my comfort zone. And I actually would swim in the springs down there. That's my favorite. I like swimming in natural bodies of water. And so I would go to the local springs and just go swimming in there. And it became this very zen kind of practice for me, because I would just go there. It's really easy. The hardest thing about getting started exercising, especially whether you're dealing with a mental health issue or not, is that the hardest step is always the one out your front door. Mm-hmm. And that never changes. It's just you have to find a way to kind of make peace with that. And so what I would do is I would go to the springs, and I would go out to this diving platform that was right over the boil and just jump into the middle of the water. And I really couldn't be anywhere else at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be an easy thing to quit, you know, if you're not wanting to walk out the front door, or if you're on a treadmill or something and you just wanted to step off, you could always do that. But when you're just out in the middle of a giant body of water, you can't be anywhere else at that point. Right. You have to be there.
What was the time frame like from those first days of walking to getting to this point in the spring? Because I feel like sometimes, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault, or it doesn't happen necessarily on purpose, but it's easy to kind of gloss over the amount of time that sometimes it takes for something like this. And I don't even know. So this is, I didn't find this anywhere on your blog when I was kind of looking through it real quick, but you know, what kind of timeline are we talking about to get to the point where, you know, like I said, to get from those first few steps to where, you know, you're getting out the door to go to the springs and do that type of thing?
Well, to kind of give you an overarching timeline, from basically the time that I decided that I wanted to change things to completing my first ultra marathon this summer, it's been about 4 years.
Okay.
And in those early days, when you start making very small changes, they're very, very difficult, but also results kind of come really quickly. It's kind of those, you know, those novice gains that you get when you try something new. And it would be things like cooking for myself rather than going out, which, you know, was kind of a byproduct of going through a divorce. I had a lot more time just being completely on my own, and I got to really analyze my life and the things that I was doing and see, you know, if I wanted to keep making the same decisions I had been making in my life beforehand. And a lot of them I decided I didn't want to make anymore. So I started cooking for myself. I started learning to read food labels. Mm. And then I started to just get outside more. I bought a bike and started to just ride a bike on a bike path near one of the springs down there. Then I started to use that, you know, as a kind of a motivator, was instead of driving to the springs to go swim, I would say, okay, if you want to swim, you need to ride your bike the 8 miles out to the spring, you know, which in the middle of summer in Florida can be a pretty tough thing to right. do. But that was part of my motivation, because I really liked the swimming aspect of it. And then the walking continued, and I started seeing results kind of over a period of about a year at the beginning, where I would drop, you know, sometimes you'd have a month where 10 pounds would drop off. And more than anything, I started to feel differently, and I started to be able to do different things. Because another one of the big motivating factors for me was, I realized as I was at my most unhealthy, when I couldn't really breathe very well, I couldn't move very well, this was a complete reversal of how I was when I was in the military. I was a rescue technician in the military, and my job was to get people out of trouble. And I realized that at that point, I felt like I was very much at the mercy of the world around me, that I couldn't even do much to kind of help myself at a certain point. So I wanted to change that. And so that's also part of what helped me keep moving. And as I started to see that, okay, that walk that took me, X amount of time a month ago took me less time. Mm-hmm. And instead of being completely dead at the end of it, I was able to keep going around, just around the parking lot, something like that. And those were the gains I was able to measure pretty quickly.
Right. And I mean, you start seeing a little bit of success in it, and that just kind of motivates you to keep going. You start feeling better. So you start doing more, and you continue to feel better. I mean, it's, once you break that downward cycle, the positive cycle starts to show itself.
Absolutely. And now that I've started sharing a little bit more about the transition, I've had a lot of people asking about that, and as far as being able to measure the gains. And so I do, tell people the amount of time that it's taken, but then I also have to tell them, you need to forget about it. You need to, if you want to actually make a change, you can't be chasing results. You have to learn to fall in love with the mm-hmm. process itself, because those results may not come at all. And even in my situation right now, on my Twitter feed, for the first time, I posted a before and after picture. And it really wasn't even a true before and after picture, because the before was still while I was in the process. I don't actually have any pictures of me when I was at my biggest. I couldn't stand to have my picture taken. I still can't stand it. But I've just kind of gotten over it and put that stuff out to try and help other people. And so I get people saying, well, I'm still in the before picture. And my response to that is usually, well, I'm, in a before picture right now. Everybody's in a before picture right now. We all have to decide what we want tomorrow to look like. And that's really the change in the mindset you have to have. You can't do anything about yesterday. You can only, course correct going forward.
Mm-hmm. When you started to go from the walking and start getting into the running, what was that process like? Because I have to feel like that, you're up in the game a little bit at that point, and I've got to imagine that had to be pretty difficult.
Oh, it was the worst thing in the world. I mean, it was absolutely terrible. And I was having, all these doctors. I guess I specifically remember one doctor I had who was a triathlon champion. Mm. And he was telling me, oh, you just go out and run and you're going to feel great. That's just not true. And if people are expecting that, it becomes really discouraging when you try to do it. If you expect the worst thing in the world, then it gets a little easier to live with, mm-hmm. because you go out there and it's all kinds of crazy things. Like, I couldn't stand the sound of my own body was making when I first started running. Like, I couldn't stand the sound of my feet hitting mm-hmm. the ground. I couldn't stand the sound of my breathing or anything like that. And so those things drove me crazy. And then you have, the typical stuff, like you can't breathe and you feel like you're going to be sick and you're in pain. You start developing hot spots, or when you're a bigger person who hasn't been moving for a while, when you first start running, it's very common to get really, really, really itchy everywhere. And it's almost like an allergic response. It's like a histamine type response. And these are the things that happen that, none of these people who are high on life and telling you to go run are going to warn you about, but they're there and just have to learn to deal with it. And those things do get better, but they're there. And when you start, there's no getting around the fact that it's terrible.
Right.
And that's just the truth of it.
And I think you could, at least from my experience, you could maybe different degrees of terrible, but like when I first started running and I wasn't maybe more than 15 or 20 pounds, kind of quote unquote overweight, like that was terrible then too. Like my body wasn't, prepared for what I was doing. So, I mean, no matter how big, how small, how athletic, how whatever you are when you start, like starting to run, it can kind of suck, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Absolutely. And the thing is that you become a creature of habit, and whatever the habit is that you choose, it becomes your normal. And so if going out and running a whole bunch is your normal, that's not going to bother you. But if you stop running, that's when, like now, if I have a taper period or I have like a big recovery time, like after Squamish, that's when aches and pains come up. It's not when you're, going out on your 20-something mile run on the weekend. You're fine with that. Mm-hmm. you just learn how to get comfortable being uncomfortable with what you've chosen to do. What a lot of people don't realize is when you're choosing other things, you're still choosing those things. If you're mm-hmm. choosing, to sit all day, you've chosen to sit all day. And so you're going to feel a certain way based on what you've chosen to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hear in the business side of things all the time that just because you're saying no to something doesn't mean that you're saying no, because that means it gives you the opportunity to say yes to something else, or vice versa. If you're saying if you're saying yes to an opportunity today, that means you're saying no to something. So it's all about, like you said, the choices you make and how that impacts. That's a great way to look at it, and a great reminder, when we get into those situations where it's like, oh yeah, like I'm not training for anything right now, so I'll slack off a little bit, which is just human nature sometimes. You're going to pay for it down the road if those are the choices that you make now when training for something does start again.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
Oh, another thing I was going to say was on the pain and the discomfort aspect that actually became very, very therapeutic for me. Once I decided to change the way I thought about it. Because especially with my history of self-harm, all of that was really born out of kind of mental and emotional pain. Mm. And it kind of manifested itself in a physical way. Running is very much the same deal. Like when you go out and you run a really hard technical mountain trail, it hurts. Mm. It's fun, but it does hurt. There is physical pain involved, but it's something that I can make sense of, where the stuff I was dealing with PTSD and depression, just I couldn't make any sense of. It seemed elusive, where if I'm going out on some long, crazy run or doing some crazy race, I know why it hurts. I know where it hurts. I know roughly how long it's going to hurt. So it's just a way of channeling the same kind of feelings and making them kind of make sense.
Yeah. I don't have that experience yet of running those gnarly mountain trails, but, I can agree with everything that you said and just plug in, flat roads in Florida. I mean, or, yep. anywhere running, like there's going to be some times that it hurts. So it definitely, transcends no matter where it is that you're running.
Absolutely.
So, I do want to talk a good bit about Squamish and kind of, the process of you getting to deciding that you wanted to run a 50K. But before we do that, I do want to ask kind of one more question centered around, the transition from where you were before you started running to kind of getting into running and whatnot. And that's always, something I ask pretty much everybody who's been in a similar type of story that I talk to. And that's for somebody that's listening to this, whether they are interested in getting started in running, whether a friend or a family member, that listens to this and is a runner, kind of passes it along to them to say, hey, here's somebody that might motivate you if they have somebody that they know that's in a similar type of situation and trying to start running and not sure exactly what to do. What would be a piece or two of advice that you would give to somebody who's, whether it's overweight or just whatever, level of unhealthy, but they're ready to do something. They're ready to get into the sport of running. From your perspective, from your past and kind of how you your point A to the current or to the present, what tips, advice can you offer to that person?
One of the biggest things is that a lot of times people will try to do too much. And that comes from a very pure and good place, because the desire to change can be really, really great. And so they immediately think, they need to change everything in their life at the same time. When right now, my life, compared to how it was a few short years ago, is completely different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live in a different state. I mean, I'm married and I have a great relationship, and just everything in my life is completely different. But I didn't do that one day. It's taking one step, find one thing and do that, and realize that doing something is usually better than doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And that is good enough. And the biggest thing I can tell people is just learn to fall in love with the process and stop worrying so much about results, because the results come when you stop looking for them. It's like there's a saying, and forgive me if someone's listening to this and they know where it came from. I can't remember where it came from, but it's great, where a lot of people say fitness should sneak up on you. And that's absolutely true. Because if you try to do major, major things, all you're going to do is either get frustrated and quit, or you're going to hurt yourself and not be able to do anything. When if you want to actually make a change, it's got to be sustainable over the long term. And so you have to be patient with it. And by falling in love with the process, that's how you're able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said it kind of as you were talking, I kept thinking patience, and then you just said it right there at the end. It's just it's tough, but you got to keep, you know, keep with the process, keep being patient, keep putting one, you know, throw all the cliches on it, keep putting one foot in front of the other, you know, don't give up, and you know, like you said, you'll find the results when you stop looking for them. That's a great thought for everybody, whether you're, you know, again, whether you're trying to change your health and go that route, which is kind of where we started with the question, obviously, but also, you know, if you're not sure you can run a marathon, and don't worry about 26.2 at the start, you know, worry about today's workout, and just, you know, it's, I could give you 1,000 examples of how that's a great piece of advice for anyone. So thank you, Joshua. That's a good one.
Absolutely. And you know that when you actually do get to those levels and you're running a marathon, or you're running, you know, further than a marathon, you're never just, at no point during the race are you ever running a marathon. You're running in that moment that you're running right then. And then sometimes you're able to extend that moment out to, okay, I'm running to the next aid station. But that's kind of how you have to break things down. And that's a really scalable model that you can bring all the way down to when you very, very first start. You're like, okay, yesterday I didn't walk, so today I'm going to walk. Doesn't matter how far I walk. No, but I walked. And then that gives you progress.
Right. And it's, you know, you're talking to somebody who's probably guilty of forgetting that sometimes, you know, when I get into a marathon and it's like, all right, I got, you know, 20 miles to go. I got 19 miles to go, whatever. It's like, it's easy to forget that, just run this mile right now and then worry about the next ones as they come. So, another, wow, this, who knew I was going to have this many things in the first, you know, 20 minutes chatting, that I'd be like, gosh, yeah, that hits me. So this is great. So you get into, you know, you kind of progressing from walking, and you're seeing some benefits, and the health's improving a little bit, and you're feeling better. And then you start running, and it hurts, and it's not fun, but you're trusting the process, and you're continuing along. At what point in that timeline, or at least about what point in that timeline, what was the idea to, I don't know if I want to say to run an ultra that came about, but I mean, you know, at what point does it go from, all right, I'm running a little bit for, you know, I'm getting into this and getting some fitness benefits to starting to make this more of a serious hobby, something that's part of my life that, you know, I want to run some races. When did that kind of evolution of your running, quote unquote career come into play?
Well, it all came about, in the first year following my divorce. Was I had moved. I now live in Portland, Oregon, which I had been obsessed with Portland for about 10 years. And I finally got to this point where I realized that I could live wherever I wanted. And so I decided to make the change and move to Portland. It's been awesome. And Portland is an outdoors town. It just is. And so there's a million different things you can do outdoors. And running is huge here. And I lived right downtown, and there are waterfront trails that, you know, I'm able to run downtown in my city without crossing a street, you know, for miles and miles. And a lot of places aren't like that. It's just been awesome. And so I would start expanding my distance more and more. And then I had the idea, because my ex-wife had run a half marathon. And I had been basically, you know, what I refer to as her Sherpa for that. And I would, you know, wait at the finish line and be holding her bag and that kind of thing. And I remember that feeling. And then, you know, I was proud of her when she did it and everything. But at the same time, it made me look at myself and realize, you know, that I was in such terrible shape. So I decided, okay, well, she ran a half marathon. I'm going to run a half marathon. And so I had never run any kind of race at all whatsoever. And I registered for one of the rock and roll half marathons and then decided to go ahead and have a warm up race before that. And I signed up for a 5K that was about a month out. And I remember running that 5K, and it was completely different than, you know, going out and running 3 miles on my own, because I got so caught up in that, you know, that race hype and went out of the gate way too fast and was taking things way too seriously and just felt like, oh, I can't even make it, 3 miles. I'm not going to make it a half marathon, but really it was that I was blowing up. I was self-sabotaging. It wasn't, it wasn't a fitness thing. It was just a lack of familiarity with what it's like to run on race day. So then when the half marathon was creeping up, I was using an app on my phone to train for it. I used the Zen Labs Couch to 10K program, which is available for free, and it's really, really good. And I also used their Half Marathon, which is a pay app, but it worked really well too. And it's one of these run-walk type models, which when you're first starting, everybody wants to think, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run every single step of everything. Well, you're not. And
right.
So just get over it and be okay with walking from time to time, and you're going to get better. But I was so nervous about running that first half marathon, and it was coming up, and I had told everybody I was going to do it. I was so nervous that the day before the half marathon, I went out and ran a half marathon to make sure I could do it. And it was in the middle of summer, and I'm just all by myself, unsupported, running through the city, for over 13 miles, and really tore myself up. But, the next day I went and I ran the Rock and Roll Half Marathon, and I finished it, and I was fine. But, I looked back, and I just laughed because of all the crazy mistakes you make when you're first starting out.
Well, you're not unique to making those crazy mistakes, I'll tell you. I can tell you that much.
No, I know that.
So you finished the first half marathon, finished the first one, and then you actually finished the race the next day, and proved to yourself that you can do it. Was a marathon the next step, or did you decide to jump right to ultra marathon status?
No, the next step was a marathon. I ran. My goal for the year that year was to run a half marathon, and I ran my first marathon in May, and then I ran my first, the Rock and Roll Half Marathon was in May. I ran that. And then the following October, I ran the Portland Marathon. And that was a pretty terrible experience, but it was great at the same time, because it was my first marathon. And a lot of people asked me immediately after, friends and so on, they were asking, what did you learn after running your first marathon? I said, well, I learned I'm really good at running half marathons now. And right. that's kind of the way it goes is, I was feeling great through that first half. And then it was right when I hit mile 17. I remember looking at the mile marker. I just felt this shot of pain go through my left knee and kind of felt like a pop. And on the Portland course, that's where the longest climb over one of our bridges is right after that mile marker. So I had that climb, and then I had the whole long slog to finish the race, and it was pure agony. but I finished it. And after that, I kind of did what a lot of people who run marathons for the first time, you beat yourself up and you felt, well, I should have done better and everything. But looking back, I ran my very first marathon. At the time, I had a sprained ankle that I would not let heal because I had a race on the schedule. Right. And you can't rest, if you have a race on the schedule. And then I got my knee checked out after that, and it turned out I had a tumor about the size of a golf ball inside my knee.
Goodness gracious.
And I had run the marathon on that. And it was one of those things where I went in and I saw the doctor, and he had my MRI results, and he just kind of looked at me and he pointed at the thing. He said, yeah, you know that's not supposed to be in there. And so... I had surgery to take that out, which was pretty terrible. Really, really painful surgery. But I decided at that point to run an ultra because I knew, because the way my life had gone in the past, that I was in danger of maybe sliding backwards and going back into old habits. And, I had a perfectly valid excuse not to go running now. But I decided I wanted to keep running, so I decided to set a long-term goal of running an ultra.
Why Squamish?
A few different reasons. One, it's considered one of the gnarliest.
Exactly, around. Exactly. So why that one is your first one?
And I'm just kind of that guy. I'm always the hard way. That's kind of just the way I do things. I'm the guy who went out and ran a half marathon.
Yeah.
I just tend to do that. But I also had it in my mind that, you know, this could be the worst experience in the world, and I could possibly never run another one again. And if I was going to have one in my back pocket, I wanted it to be one that I was really, really proud of. And the thing is, there's no such thing as like an easy ultra marathon. Right. But I wanted one that was kind of just epic. And in this corner of the globe, that one's really well known for just being super, super technical, super gnarly, lots of elevation. You go over and through mountains, and it's pretty epic. And then I also really, really appreciate and respect Gary Robbins, one of the race directors. He's just like my favorite ultra runner in the world. You know, I'm a fan of this sport, and I follow, you know, his accomplishments, and he's always been a guy who's just very open about the challenges he faces. And he's even been very open about some of the races that he was not successful at. And that was really inspiring. And so I wanted to go up there and just be a part of that community. And so that was the one I set my eyes on. Gotcha. And it lived up to the hype.
Awesome. 10,000 foot view. So it lived up to the hype. What about it was great? How was your experience? I know we could probably talk for another hour or more on just that race, but kind of the overview. What was your first ultra marathon experience like?
Well, first and foremost, the people were fantastic. Squamish is a really cool town. I've kind of fallen in love with that area, and my wife has as well. She's a rock climber, and so she has lots of opportunities up there to go on some pretty great rock faces, and I was able to do some training runs up there this summer before the actual, months before the actual 50K. I didn't go out and like do it the day before.
But you learned that lesson, eh?
Yeah. But as far as the people like Gary Robbins and Jeff Langford, the race directors, they're just the nicest guys. Can't do enough for you. All the volunteers involved are absolutely incredible. And just the community surrounding the race was fantastic. You felt very, very taken care of and very encouraged and very welcome being there. And, some races you can kind of get lost. And this was one where that was at no risk of that happening. You felt like you were just as important as the first person who was finishing. Mm-hmm. Because I've had races where I've gone out and I've had friends come in after me, and I've gone out to the finish line to cheer them in, and the race directors have already dismantled and taken away the finish line stuff before, while they still have people out on the course. And I think that's terrible, right? Because those people are out there suffering longer than everybody else. They deserve everything. They deserve the full race experience too. And Squamish was not like that at all. They catered to absolutely everybody, from these incredible elite runners. Dakota Jones won the men's 50 mile the day before, and Anna Frost was there. I mean, it was incredible seeing these guys. But then you've got all the rest of us, and we felt just as taken care of as the elite runners who were on the course. It was really good.
Awesome. And again, guys, I know I mentioned it quickly at the beginning, but he's got a great write-up about his experience. So if you want to check out, if you're interested in learning more about not only Joshua's experience, but just Squamish in general, check it out again at I'll have the link in the show notes, but if you're just kind of on the go, aliferelentless.wordpress.com is the website. You can check it out there. So Joshua you run this race, and if you you don't have to listen to too many of the past episodes of the show to know where I come down on the whole ultra running thing, and how how many times have I said 26.2 is enough, but I'm not going to go farther than that. A few times I've let it slip recently that a 50K is probably on the table, probably sooner than I want to admit, but it's probably something that'll be happening in the next 6 months to a year if I'm gonna be fully honest. So somebody who just ran your first 50K and admittedly, much, much gnarlier than what I'm thinking about for my first 50K, because it'll probably be something down here in Florida, so it'll be flat and sandy and swampy. tell me what I'm missing out by getting, by sticking to the roads, by sticking to the marathon distance. What am I missing that would make me want to, get rid of my one narrative that I'm never going to run an ultra and go out and sign up to do my first ultra?
Well, I think it's really beneficial for everybody to not just train for, but race a lot of different distances and a lot of different types of terrain, because you never really know when you hit your thing until you hit it. And for me, it's all about gnarly technical mountain trails and, really dense trees and mud and rocks and honestly bad weather too. Like I run really, really well when the weather gets bad. So for me, the experience of running a road marathon when it was sunny and nice and perfect weather was absolutely terrible. But then I go out and I run in the mountains and, I've got hail coming down on me and thunder and lightning and all that, and I just cannot be happier. And so it just speaks to me that way. And you really don't know until you go out and do it. And then when you start to get out past the marathon distance, it just, for me, it kind of just changed my entire mindset about the run. It was very much staying in the moment, very much just enjoying every step, and especially doing my first, because I was able to just throw any and all expectations out the window. I wasn't running to get a better time than last year or anything like that. I was just surviving the course. And so that was a very, very good experience for me. And it just helped me stay in the moment that way. And so it can be a really good thing. And when you start to get past that marathon distance, it just gets you out of that comfort zone in one more way, especially when you start to really have success in your journey as far as meeting your fitness goals and whatever. At first, when you hit a wall, it can be very discouraging and I'm never going to get past this. But then the more experience you get with it, I started finding my mindset would change when I would get on a really nasty trail and I could barely move. And I'd be like, oh, instead of thinking I'm a terrible runner, I should be able to get through this. Now instead I think, oh, this is awesome. This is something I can get better at. The 50K distance is kind of that way, especially if you've dialed in the marathon, because it doesn't seem on paper like it's that big of a change, but it really and truly is. I mean, it's kind of this transcendent experience. It just changes the entire feeling of race day.
Another chat with an ultra runner, another step closer to doing it, to taking the plunge. I don't even know why I talk to you people anymore, because y'all just keep pushing me towards doing it. But it'll happen. But yeah, I mean, it's something that I guess maybe it even ties back to the to being a little kid. Like you don't try it before you decide you don't like it. Like I've never tried it. So why am I sitting here bashing it so much? I need to give it a shot. And like you said, if it's not my thing, it's not my thing. But who knows? I might just be surprised.
Well, it kind of ties into something a friend of mine asked the other day. Because right now I'm doing a race series in Portland that's every other Wednesday night. It's just kind of low key, and it's here in Forest Park. It's in the Tualatin Mountains that are on the western side of the city. We just kind of meet up at like 6:15 every other Wednesday, and we run these courses that are about 10K. Some a little bit more, some a little bit less. And somebody asked, they're like, "Well, is 10K even a race for you?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's way worse than running a 50K." Because running a 50K, you're basically speed hiking at that point, and you're taking care of yourself. Now, when I go run a 5K or a 10K, it's like you go out as hard as you can, you just hold on for dear life until the end, and it's terrible. But, they're all great in their own way.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I've experienced that. I mean, even just the difference between a like I'd rather run a marathon than a 5K, even though a marathon hurts and it's hard and it beats you up. But like, man, at least you can be comfortable for a while before the pain really starts to hurt, as opposed to, man, the 5K, it just hurts from the beginning. The 10K is not a whole lot better, but maybe just a touch, but not a whole lot.
Yep, absolutely.
So when is the next gnarly trail ultra for you? Or have you not thought that far yet?
I'm starting to plan out the next couple of years. I do have some long-term goals. When I finished the Portland Marathon, I kind of said I would never run farther than a half marathon again. I just hated it. And nothing against the Portland Marathon course itself. It's just the experience wasn't the greatest for me, and for good reason.
I was gonna say,
But
for what it's worth, you might want to try running one without a tumor in your knee. Like maybe that would
yeah,
make the experience
exactly.
better.
Exactly. But then when I finished Squamish, I just immediately crossing the finish line, I just had the thoughts, you know, I understand this. I get this. This makes sense. And I've felt that about the half marathon distance, and I felt that now about the 50K distance. So I've loaded up the next few months with a bunch of half marathons. I've got, you know, most of them are on trails. And then I'm also going to be doing, I'm actually going to be down in Florida to do the Star Wars Disney races down there. I'm doing the ones in Disneyland and in Disney World this year. I decided to go ahead, and if I'm going to do it, you know, do
get
it
them,
big.
Get them both, yep.
So I'm doing that, and then I've got a bunch of trail races here and there, and then I'm picking out. I'm going to do another 50 next year, and then go from there. I've got some dream races long term that I'm thinking of that are above the 50K distance, but you know, I'm still, you know, very much dialed into getting better at the 50K and then starting to expand my mileage from there.
Well, yeah. And I mean, and you know, going back to what you said about the process type of, you know, trusting the process and focusing on the process, like it takes a while to build up to a fitness and to your body being able to withstand, you know, being on your feet for that long, whether it's 50 mile or 100K, 100 mile, whatever it might be. I mean, that's not something that you just enter into, you know, overnight, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like it takes some time to get there.
No, definitely not. And there, you know, was a certain level of recovery that I'm still in, you know, coming off the race. It was a little over a month ago, but it's also the fact that my body's recovering from the training that went into it beforehand, you know, because the training was really, really gnarly for about 5 or 6 months. So right now it's just nice having my weekends back. I'm able to choose my distance and go run. I'm still going to go run on the weekends, but I get to choose where and why I run.
Right.
But I'm already starting to feel the itch to, you know, go back out there.
Start stretching those legs out again.
Definitely.
Definitely. So as we're getting kind of close to wrapping things up, Joshua, you probably heard I've been starting to ask these philosophical questions a little bit at the end, and I've got a little bit different one. This is one that I haven't asked before, but I'd love to ask you, as you were, you know, in the last couple of years, as you've gotten more into the running scene and, you know, going from the half marathon to the marathon, ultra and everything that we talked about, at what point in that journey or in on your timeline were you able to identify yourself to yourself as a runner, and what was it that made the light bulb go on in your mind to say that, all right, you know what, I really am a runner now, if that makes sense?
It's really interesting that you ask that question, because my wife constantly says, you know, she's not a runner, but you know, she owns 2 pairs of trail shoes. She signed up for some races. She goes out and she runs 7 miles with me in the mountains. But when she finishes, I always look at her and go, but you're not a runner.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So if you run, you run. But I remember feeling the exact same way. In fact, I had the first half marathon was behind me. I had a few 10Ks, a few 5Ks, and I was actually out at one of the Pride runs for Pride Portland, and it was a nighttime one of those glow runs where, you know, they give you all kinds of really cool neon stuff that's hanging all over you. It's just, they're really low key and they're lots of fun. And I just remember going out and running as hard as I could. It was a 5K. I was very, very familiar with the course, and I was in a pack, and a bunch of people started falling behind me, and I was still hanging on with this pack of really good runners. And I just started to get this feeling like I was going to be able to hang on for the rest of the race. And the thought came into my head saying, holy cow, you're a runner. And it wasn't any medals or anything that did it for me. It wasn't anything. It was just that realization that I was not struggling anymore. I mean, then it's, of course, the first thing you do when you find yourself doing that is you find something that you will struggle at, because that's how you grow. But I do specifically remember having that thought during that race. And it was probably about my fifth or sixth race at that point.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people can probably relate, even to you, but certainly to your wife, where it takes a while to you can wrap your head around it. Like you said, it took you, you know, several races before you kind of had gotten to that point. But yeah, it's always interesting. And like, I don't know why I've never asked that question before, but it kind of came to me today, and I thought it might be a fun one. So thank you for taking us down that journey. And something that I think a lot of people, and myself included, can relate to of running some races before we consider ourselves a runner. So that's a cool story. Thank you.
I also think a lot of people might come from, especially if you're just getting into it, they might come from the opinion that they don't think other people will consider them a runner. But the thing is, you just have to realize that if someone's going to think of you that way, that person's a jerk anyway, and you don't really care what they think.
Exactly.
So just get over that and just kind of define yourself as you want to be defined, and you'll find people who support you and care about you and want you to succeed. And that happens in the running community.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it any better, and I'm not even going to try to pretend. I'm gonna let that set and wrap things up. You know, if you think you're a runner, you're a runner, and the running community will support you. That's fantastic. So again, guys, alife relentless.wordpress.com is the website. Say hi to Joshua on Twitter @alife relentless, and I'll have links to everything we talked about and anything that makes sense in the show notes for this episode. You can find it at dizruns.com/323. So Joshua, man, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for sharing your story, and I mean, I know it's inspiring people. So thank you for doing that. I hope you continue to share that message and thanks for the time today. I appreciate it. And all the best going forward. Looking forward to staying in touch and seeing what the future holds for you.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Joshua and myself. And as always, I'd love to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was your takeaway from this conversation? For me, I think it, I mean, there were a half a dozen things, but I think the thing that really stands out the most is the need to be committed to the process. You know, if you're wanting to, whatever running goals you might have, working to get to them is going to take a minute. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not, there's not any magic pill or secret trick or anything simple. Anything fast that's going to help you get there, whether that's, you know, just getting started like Joshua did when he needed to take a break from vacuuming the house because he'd be so winded to run an ultra marathon or wherever you are trying to qualify for Boston or run a new distance or your first ultra or whatever. It's a process. It takes a while. You have to, you know, go from point A to point B to point C, and eventually you end up at the destination, but you got to trust and commit to that process. And it's just a good reminder. I mean, I'm human as much as anybody else is. And I get stuck in that trap of trying to do things quick. What's the quick way? And you know, that's in running in other areas of life as well, to be perfectly frank. And that's, you know, this conversation with Joshua happened right when I needed it to just remind me. Stick to the process, have a plan, stick with it. And you'll keep making progress and who knows where you'll end up, but you got a whole lot better chance to getting where you want to get to if you commit to the process than if you just, you know, try to fly by the seat of your pants willy nilly, whatever seems like it's going to be the easiest, best decision at the time. Have a plan and stick to it. So that's my takeaway, and I'd love to hear what stood out to you. What was it for you? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet @DizRun. Shoot me an email. dizruns@gmail.com, or better yet, head to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/323. Leave a comment, and that way others can see what stood out to you from this episode as well. So that's it for today. Thanks again to Joshua for taking the time, and thanks to Energy Bits for coming on board. Again, energybits.com, and don't forget to use the code DIZRUNS. Save yourself 20%. Unlike a lot of coupon codes that I've had before, that's an every time. That's not just a first time purchase. That's every time. So that's a cool thing from Energy Bits, and thanks to them for being on board. And with that, let's wrap this thing up for today. Thanks for listening, guys. As always, I appreciate it. I can't say it any better than that. And I hope you know that packs a lot of punch. I really do appreciate your time and your attention and everything you do, all the interactions we have and the support that you've given and the All the ways that each and every one of you have gone above and beyond for me. So I appreciate it and look forward to talking to you guys again in the not too distant future. But until then, take care of yourselves and we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.